Meet Sven. He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Annie Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's June 5th, 2009, and you're listening to the best poker podcast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
You know, Scott, I was a big fan of Rich Little when I was a kid. Do you remember him?
Oh, yeah. He used to do those great Reagan impressions.
Yeah, he was always a good impressionist. I mean, no matter, he did Johnny Carson incredibly. And
yeah, he was always on the Bob Hope specials, you know, with the Playboy All-American football teams. And,
yeah, I remember that. I'm sure half our listeners now are saying, who's Bob Hope? But, you know, I remember sometimes he would do those roasts and he would make fun of people by doing their impressions of them. And some people would get ticked off. But, you know, they always say imitation is the sincerest form of flattery.
Yeah, and, you know, the people being imitated are the ones that say that.
Yeah, I guess. But, you know, I got to tell you, to me, lately, it seems like it's the most sincere form of robbery. I got to tell you, you know, was I offended when 2 Plus 2 started calling its show a poker cast? Clearly stealing that title from us, I wasn't happy about it. But, you know, I was like, hey, it's a compliment. We came up with a cool name, and they thought it was cool, too, so they used it. Because no one else had ever done that before we did 4 years ago. Was I upset when Bluff Magazine starts a health column that we already had established as the only one in the country for a poker magazine? Was I pissed? Maybe a little, but again, it was a compliment.
Yeah, and you can't beat Dr. Frank either.
Yeah, you know, exactly. He's the best out there, so I don't really care, because you know the doctors that they're hiring aren't real poker players anyway. So, you know, it's a compliment, I guess. They see that, holy cow, we're trendsetters, they're copying us. But now, I'm a little upset. Poker Road, it's bad enough that they had to create like 105 different podcasts on Barry Greenstein's bankroll and then combine all the votes to beat us out of the Bluff Award. But now, they got this Twitter update thing, and the website is called Poker Road Nation. WTF, Scott!
Well, in fairness here, we kind of stole the nation from Red Sox and Gator fans everywhere.
But they
aren't
poker people. We were the first poker site.
I don't know. Those Gator basketball players are pretty big into poker, so...
I just got to tell you, you know, I feel like, you know, we're coming up with all the ideas and everyone else is stealing them.
Yeah, well, you know, we'll just keep coming up with more ideas and see who else can steal them. Eventually, we'll run out of people that can steal them.
I tell you, competition keeps you on your toes, man. I think we should start stealing stuff from them.
No, you know what? I'm going to take the high road, as I often do, and I'm going to be firmly anti-theft.
Okay, so then you're telling me that you're going to turn down Barry Greenstein when he called me today and said he wanted to be part of our show from now on?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I'll break the news to him later.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that we already are going to have to lengthen the show to talk about one-minute mystery a lot, so... I don't want to bring Barry Greenstein on and just, you know, he's going to keep yapping and, you know.
Yeah, and who needs quality, you know, analysis
exactly.
of hands anyway?
Absolutely.
Because we aren't giving it, so.
Exactly. That's our real originality is in absolutely terrible hand analysis. And if they want to steal that from us, they can go right ahead.
By all means, you can have the terrible thievery. It just shocks me. I mean... I was like, oh, I got my Twitter thing. Maybe I'll put a Twitter note up today. You know, I still don't get it. Even, like, Conan O'Brien is making fun of the Twittering. But I'm like, all right, I'll do something. And then all of a sudden I see this Poker Road, and it's like a news announcement, too. It's like on the wires. I'm like, are you kidding me? What's the big deal? And then I call it up, and I'm like, wait a minute. Poker Road Nation, I am not happy. Oh, man.
Well, you know, we've talked a lot about in this show, Chris, about the quote-unquote implied collusion.
Yes.
You know, in a tournament when you've got a player all in and you do that little wink-wink, you know, frat house secret handshake to let people know, hey, we're going to check it down and knock this guy out so we can get close to the money, right?
Yep.
So I was down at the Sarasota Kennel Club, One Eye Jacks, hanging out with our good friend Sam Minatello, and I jumped into one of those little six-handed sit-and-goes.
I vaguely remember one of those.
Exactly, that you famously took down, dispatching two pros in the process.
Yeah, yeah.
And I did not have that high quality of a field of competitors.
Yours was probably more difficult than mine was, I would venture to guess.
It could have been, but, you know, because I don't really play the six-handed. That's, you know, No Limit's not really my game to begin with, but six-handed, I just get obliterated online when I play those things.
Uh-huh.
But I took out everybody in this tournament. It was like the best sit and go tournament of my life, right?
That's awesome.
But here's the thing, it could have been better, and this whole stupid implied collusion, I think, cost me some money.
Oh, I'm dying to hear how this went.
All right, so here's the thing, we're down to three-handed, right? And the top two pay. All right, so we're on the bubble. Normally my spot to go out, but I had an immense chip lead at this point, so I was going to have to try really hard to keep up my bubble streak. So the kid to my right goes all in, and for like one big bet more. So, you know, I don't have to look at my cards, right? And
right.
I've got 10-5 offsuit, so I put the chip in, and then the other opponent, too, doesn't really have to look at his cards and, you know, puts his chip in, right?
Yep.
Flop comes 5-5-X. And I'm like, wow, that's pretty nice. But, you know, implied collusion.
Uh-huh.
You know, I don't want to get too frisky here because something else could come and, you know, we're actually on the bubble now, right?
Right.
So I just check it. It checks behind me. The turn now brings a club. So now there's three clubs on board.
Hmm.
All right. So now is probably the time in the implied collusion where the implied part of the implied collusion let you bet if you have a real hand, right?
What are you implying here?
So by all means, I should have bet here, but the club came. So now, again, now I'm worried about chasing out somebody, my other opponent, if the other guy has clubs and then he has clubs. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to knock out the other stack that's going to finish second to your first if you think that he's going to have a better club to make a flush bigger than the other guy because you're not going to make a flush.
Yeah.
So you're trying to protect your money here.
Right. So I check. The river comes. We both check it down. My other opponent, who still has the money, smiles at me, and he's like, man, I'm really sorry about this. And I'm like, oh, my God, he has the flush. I'm going to lose this pot when I flop a set.
Right.
And he trips, right?
Right.
And I'm like, oh, and he's like, flush? What do you mean a flush? And he turns up 5-deuce. So I flip over my 10-5 to 10 plays. I take down the pot. The other guy had rubbish.
Uh-huh.
Now, here's the thing. Had I bet this hand, this other guy would have gone all in, right?
I don't think he would have gone all in.
Up a flop? When he flops 3-5s?
I don't know if he goes all in there. He may call with a stern look at you, you know, saying, dude, cut it out, you know, because if he goes out and the other guy makes a flush, then he, because you're the big stack, I don't think he goes all in there, Scott. I think he doesn't want to risk money. So I think you bet. He looks at you like you're a donk that you are and calls and then sort of gives you the old implied stare down again and says, look, I got this pot won, and just relax. And then if you happen to bet out again, what if the guy had ace 5? You know, and then the other guy makes a flush. Now you're short stacked, and you get knocked out on the next hand. I think I'm going to try to make you feel better about this, and you did the right thing.
I did the right thing.
If it was a huge tournament, and we're at the bubble, and then I would bid out because you've got a lot more people and a lot more places to go. But you can only go up one spot, and likely you're going to chop this thing anyway. So what are you gaining, you know?
All right. Well, we ended up chopping, too.
So. There you go. So I make you feel better, right?
Yeah, I know, but, you know. Then I was riding home, and I'm like, man, I should have been greedy. I could have won the whole damn thing. Too nice.
Oh, man, you are way too nice. Yeah. Is that the same strategy you you imply when you use your what is that double or nothing stuff that you play?
The double or nothing. Yes, you know, I've been holding on to this for a while. We've had such good banter stuff to talk about that just haven't worked into the show. But, you know, I got onto these little double or nothing tournaments that are running on PokerStars. And I know you've heard about them, and people have talked about them on our home game. But, you know, I got to say, I kind of like these things.
Yeah, I mean, I think when they first started, I thought these are simple, and there's, you know, it's definitely strategy involved. But I just steer clear of any tournaments anyway, so I don't, you know, I never really give them much thought. But what do you think? You really liking them?
Well, yeah, I mean, in the first five that I played, there was only one time I didn't cash. So, you know, and I think it kind of fits my style. I'm not one of these guys that likes to go out and chip up quickly.
Okay.
Which is probably what you need to do in a lot of these tournaments.
Yeah.
You know, I just kind of sit there and wait for good cards or good spots and, you know, hang on and then get down to that bubble and then abuse people.
Right.
And that's perfect for these things, I think. Because I still see people trying to chip up in these. And I don't get it. You only have to beat half the field.
Well, I think once they chip up, they go away, you know, because they know they're going to make it. You know,
yeah, but you're putting a lot of risk to try to chip up without a good solid hand. I'm not saying if you flop a set that you shouldn't be trying to chip up. Obviously, you should. But, you know, making moves with, like, naked ace-king or something like that to chip up, just it's too much of a risk in a tournament where you only have to beat half the field, I think.
Yeah, no, and I'm not saying that's the right way to do it. I'm just saying I'm sure that's what they're thinking is that, my God, if I win one pot here and double up, I'm in the money no matter what because I'll have a quarter of the chips in play or whatever.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm sure that's their thinking, but I usually would stay tight and pick a hand that I can really make some money on and then just play tight again, you know, and watch the other idiots go out.
I mean, the thing about poker is there's so much variance, right? So, I mean, you got to think that a couple, at least three of the players in every sit and go are going to go out with bad luck.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So,
that's a
lot. you really just got to, you know, as long as that's not you.
That's a lot of bad luck for one single, but it's about right, I think, when you're playing online.
So then you're just outlasting two more. I have to now play two other people. So
yeah.
So here's the thing. I played five initially, didn't cash one. So why am I not playing these all the time, Chris?
I don't know.
Oh, thanks for asking. And the answer is just like everything else in my poker career, they're kind of boring.
Yeah.
You know, you play poker because you want to be challenged, don't you? I mean, I guess this is kind of the epiphany that's coming out of this for me. Is that I like to be challenged. So even if I find something that I'm really good at that I can consistently win, I can't consistently play it because I get bored with it and I need a bigger challenge.
All right, well, you know what? I've got the answer to your problems.
Do you?
Yeah, you're so good at these double or nothings. Start buying in for like $100 double or nothings instead of $5.
Yeah,
that will be challenging.
I tell you where the wheels came off in this strategy is when I played like four of these at a time.
Oh, man.
And that did not go well.
Yeah, you buying in for one that's going to make you sweat a little bit or make you think about the buy-in, you're gonna believe me, you won't be bored with it.
Yeah, all right. No, that's a good point. Yeah, yeah. Maybe because of it that I need to bump the level.
Well,
see,
that's why,
you're smart.
That's why everyone, you know, no one plays filet money and takes it seriously because it doesn't get your heart racing. Who cares?
Yep.
So you play a $1 one, doesn't get your heart racing. Who cares? You play a $5 one, you know. And maybe a little bit, but not really. Well, you start getting a 50 and 100. Boy, I tell you what, you're going to be really interested in that double or nothing. You know, you're putting your paycheck on the line. You're going to pay attention to who's pushing and who's not.
Well, speaking of our paychecks, you know, here at Andy Up, we're always looking for new ways to squeeze a little revenue out of everything, aren't we?
Well, I was going to say, speaking of pushing, I was going to say we're going to push stuff on you guys.
Oh, very good. Well played. we've got a lot of things on our housekeeping list today, but the first thing is introducing our new Hot Deals webpage.
Hot Deals.
You know, a very unique name. No one else has used Hot Deals.
Are you,
you
sure?
Know.
I think maybe Poker Road has it somewhere. And we're stepping on their toes with their Hot Deals Poker Road t-shirts or something.
But anyhow, go to antiupmagazine.com/hotdeals.
That's original.
And you'll have our monthly hot deal item. It's always going to be some Anti-Up logoed item, not the stuff on Cafe Press, though by all means, go there and buy a bunch of stuff.
Yes.
This is going to be unique stuff that we go out and buy and stock up and sweat as no one buys it for a month. And the opening item is a very cool Anti-Up patch. You know those little self-adhesive ones, Chris?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you're going to the World Series or a big event, put it on and give us some free advertising.
Just pull the little back off, slap it on your favorite shirt. Well, maybe not your favorite shirt, but, you know, a shirt you don't mind slapping a big old patch on.
Yeah.
And you're going to look styling.
Matter of fact, I know.
All for the low price of $6. Shipping included.
I know that right now, literally as we're speaking, Lee Childs is playing in the World Series, and he's got the patch on his arm.
Ah. And does he have a patch too, or just that nicotine one?
That would be cool. That's what we need to come up with.
Excellent.
The Anti-Up nicotine patch. Of course, nobody will see it because it'll be on their skin under their shirt, so that's not good.
But anyhow, once a month, everybody who has signed up for our free weekly e-newsletter, and you can go to antiupmagazine.com/subscribe to get on that list, will be the first to know of the hot deals. We'll send it out every month, and I'll whisper it very quietly next month, Anti-Up cut cards. Pretty sweet, pretty sweet. So
yeah,
you want
cool.
to be the first one to know about those.
We used those in our home game this week. They were good.
And, you know, Chris, I always like giving away swag, and you're always kind of like the bean counter and always trying to hold me back, and that's cool.
And I'm gonna.
But, you know, when I can go out and find somebody else to give us the swag to give away, it's hard for you to say no, right?
Yeah, no, it's hard to say no, but I still have to pull the reins back a little bit. There's always some sort of ulterior motive with these things that I have to be on the lookout for because you're just always, you know, looking through rose-colored glasses at everything, you know?
Well, anyhow, you know, I got back from Chicago. We talked about it on the show, and while I was up there, I met a great guy, Joel, from High Roller Clothing. He's doing a whole line of new T-shirts. They're really cool, including one of them. It's an Anti-Up shirt. He didn't even know about us. He made a shirt about Anti-Up, and so he's going to be sponsoring this new feature in our magazine that we're calling Anti-Up Around the World.
Well, maybe we're calling it that. I'm not sure yet.
Maybe different by the time you get your
Maybe called Going Global. We're not sure what we're going to call it yet.
But anyhow, what we're looking for is folks to send us a photo of them holding up their cherished copy of Anti-Up magazine somewhere around the world.
Yeah.
And if you don't have a copy of the magazine, one, shame on you. But two, you can substitute some Anti-Up merchandise for that photo.
Yeah.
Snap that photo, send it to us. If we like it, we'll run it in the magazine every month. And then you'll win one of these great Anti-Up shirts from our new friend at High Roller.
Yeah, you know, we want it to be an exotic location, somewhere not like, you know, like Zorak's bedroom. Although that might be exotic.
Yeah, I think you might have pushed the exotic level there. But,
but we, you know, we want it somewhere different than where you live, or even if you can, different from the United States. You know what I mean? Somewhere cool, and we'll earn that shirt, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm looking forward to seeing what they send in.
All right, so email that photo to editor@antiupmagazine.com, and we'll see if we can get you in the next issue.
Awesome.
And then, Chris, Apes coming up Wednesday
yes,
night.
Yes, yes. I have to think that I'm a favorite in this event.
Ah, do you?
Yes.
Why is that?
Well, because I think everyone else who won a seat were Brazilians. So I think I was right near the bubble, and for people who were taking it seriously instead of just sitting there and not playing or whatever – you know, when they start taking it seriously, paying their own money to play in it, they're gonna suffer my wrath. So I'm gonna do my best to cash in this one, man.
Well, very good. Well, again, it's Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8-game mixed. It's a $10 plus $1 buy-in this time.
Yep.
It's gonna be highly competitive, I think.
I've already registered.
Yeah, you know what? I just realized after I got bumped out of that free roll, I did not immediately register like I usually do. So
better
I'm gonna have
there.
To. Let me hold on. I'm going to write myself a note here. Register for Apes.
You better hurry up because you right. might get that 999 player max or whatever.
Yes, that's right. All right, better worry about it. And then finally in housekeeping, one more reminder on the great Anti-Up cruise. We are 2 weeks away, Chris, 2 weeks away from the booking deadline.
Yep.
If you get in after that, we can't promise you you're going to have a cabin, and we certainly can't promise you you're going to get it for the low, low price of $359 per person.
Man, you sound like a commercial.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm working on it.
Jeez.
But go to anyupmagazine.com/cruise. You got all the details there, plus some ways you can win it in great Florida card rooms. And hopefully by the time people are listening to this, our great presenting sponsor will have some satellites up online.
I tell you, it's getting exciting. Like every day now, more and more people are calling you and booking, and it's just, it's remarkable how many people found out about it now and are really excited and looking forward to it, especially now that everything's cool. All the boats are going back to Mexico. There's no more swine flu to worry about. And it's just, it's going to be a lot of fun. Really looking forward to it.
Absolutely. It's going to be a good time. So join us.
Let's take a look at what's on the Annie Up news desk today.
On June 17th, the NHL Charity Shootout, presented by PokerStars.net, will feature NHL stars, Team PokerStars pros, celebrities, and online qualifiers in a shootout tournament for charity that will be taped to air on ESPN.
Cool. More free poker shows.
You know what I really like about this item, though, Chris? Is that you got the old stodgy graybeard NFL out there pissing and moaning, taking their shoe off, banging it on the desk to stop online poker from being exempt and legal in this country, fighting it tooth and nail. And here you go. You got the cool, way cool NHL saying, you know what? There's no harm in poker. But in fact, this is a good way for us to increase our brand.
Well, the other thing I'm wondering, too, though, wasn't the NHL the one that was complaining about Matt Sundin's relationship with PokerStars?
No. There was other people that were wondering whether it was going to be NHL. And apparently by this, it's not.
All right, excellent.
All right, moving on. Prosecutors in Texas say a defendant on trial in connection with a woman's death from a cocaine overdose held poker games near Southern Methodist University in order to attract customers for his drug business.
Oh, isn't that what you do?
Ha ha ha. Funny. No, I'm big into fish oil now, but you can get that over the cap.
Fish oil. Wow, that's pretty sad.
Wow. You know, hey, drug business off. What can I do? Hey, let's play poker.
Oh, my God, that is so sad. And so close to Southern Methodist. I mean, that's like blasphemy.
Well, you know, I also have to wonder, too, if Texas actually allowed poker and regulated it and all that kind of stuff, whether people would be dying to go to a game enough that they're going to get hooked on coke.
Oh, man.
You think I could sell that story?
Yeah, you probably could. Oh, my God. Well, speaking of Texas, I know that Texans used to own the World Series.
Yeah, you know, the World Series has started, so we're going to do updates every week, and we'll pause right here to let you know. If you don't want to find out what happened to World Series, well, you might just want to take, I don't know, 6 months off of the show?
Well, here's the thing.
Because we're going to be doing some spoilers for you.
We really aren't doing any spoilers, because none of this is going to be on TV.
Oh, very good point, very good point.
You know, just about none of this is going to be on. It's just ridiculous. ESPN's not putting anything on TV, so fire away. They don't care.
All right, here's some highlights from the first week of the World Series. Dang Liu repeats as the Omaha 8 champion. He won it last year, Chris, won again this year, and he went deep the year before, I think, too, right?
Yeah, that is unbelievable.
Now, our good friend Nolan Dahla, who sends out very good press releases, chock full of information, love him to death. I think he might have oversold this a little bit. Try to compare this to Johnny Chan's race in the main event. Though, he's right. There's a lot more people in these Omaha 8 events. But
yeah, Johnny Chan went like first, second, and seventh in the main event in 4 consecutive years. I really don't think that's the same. But it is pretty remarkable considering the size of the fields and the quality of play now.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, the $1,000 stimulus special sold out at just a hair more than 6,000 seats.
Man.
Conversely, the $40,000 tournament that's new this year, Chris, got just 201 entries.
That's still a lot of entries.
All right, you know, here's the thing. When I first saw that, I'm like, all right. But, you know, look at the prize pool. The prize pool for the stimulus special, just a hair over or a hair under $5.5 million. Prize pool for the $40,000 tournament. 8 million plus.
Well, you know, there really only are about 200 to 300 people who can afford that buy-in anyway, so that's about right.
That's true. And but, you know, here, you know, I keep thinking back to when Sam was on our show and talking about tournament entries and things like that, and here's a good example. I mean, you know, if I'm a poker room manager, what tournament I'm going to run?
Yeah.
The $40,000 one that's only going to tie up 200 of my dealers, or 20 of my dealers?
Yeah.
and make me more money, or the one that's going to, like, you know, shut down my room for 4 days?
And players were already complaining, too, because the amount of juice that they get for, like, the $40,000 tournament, you know, they should be doing more for them or something. I don't know, some whiny thing somewhere. Yeah. But they do get a serious amount of juice on that.
Yeah. All right, Doyle Brunson and Amarillo Slim challenge each other to a scooter race, Chris.
Wow.
With a quote-unquote sizable wager. I don't believe the sizable wager was disclosed, was it?
I don't think so.
The World Series did not tell us who won, but you reported that Slim took it down.
Yeah, you know, I saw him out there. He was taking off, like, the quarter panels off to make his cart lighter. You know, he was fasting all week and made the cart lighter. But, you know, here's the thing. I'm nervous for Doyle because, you know, he could have gotten into an accident and increased his health risk, you know, for that bet he's got going on with that other guy about if he's going to live or die this year. He's crazy doing it.
I wonder if Slim, instead of the scooter, drove that four-wheeler that that guy stole from him. That would have given him an advantage.
Or that raft he took down the Colorado River that time for that stupid bet that he made. Almost killed him.
And then finally, Tom McAvoy, Chris, wins the Champions Invitational. And I'm going to say it, Robert Varcone was the runner-up.
Yeah, amazing.
So, you know, all that great research that that Gary guy that we talked about with the bets last week, you know, Tom McAvoy was the one with the money on.
Yeah, and he even said, Pat McAvoy said he felt he was going to win it because he was going to take it seriously, and sure enough, he did. And, you know, and some of the other stuff, too, is we said that I would take the over on, the, what was it, 18.5 or whatever,
right,
and 20 players played. So
exactly.
You know, we would have made some – we should have put all of Antium's money on that one.
We should have. We would be up to $40 now.
I was going to say, we still have like 12 bucks, but it would be worth it.
Now, an interesting part of this Champions Invitational was that Greg Raymer was essentially blinded out.
Yeah.
He was at the final table, the 40K event, and he after he got eliminated in that, he came over. He played one hand, Chris, Champions Invitational, hit the pavement. And I have to ask, whose a great idea was it to schedule the Champions Invitational overlapping with the 40K?
It makes no sense because both of these are going to be televised on ESPN as well, so they're doubling their crews to get it all in, and it makes no sense. Why didn't they stagger it?
Yeah, you know, and here's the release that came from the World Series said that every hand of the Champions Invitational was taped by ESPN. All right, now, and that's great because, again, it's a two-table sit-and-go.
Right.
Right, you know, like we said. But nine players by my count, nine of the 20 were entered in the 40K event.
God.
So I think they just dodge bullets, baby, that only Greg Raymer made it to the final table of that event. Can you imagine if that final table, the 40K, was the nine guys that were supposed to be playing in the other one?
Oh, man.
And you have Robert Varcone over there raising and taking a bunch of dead stacks?
It's conceivable. Something like that could have happened.
Oh, that would be just amazing. Wouldn't that be great TV, watching one guy sit there and raise and... You know, who knows whether they're going to bring the 40K back next year or not, but if they do, or even for that matter, the Champions Invitational. But
and I just got to wonder, too, Scott,
there.
Would the Antiup Nation be on the rail saying, hey, Varcone, must be rough having nine guys to your left who are sitting out? Because that's all they do with me. You know, it's like it's my problem that I set up the Poker Stars free roll to have all these guys sitting out on my left. You know, same thing with Varcone. Hey, Varcone! That's probably what happened in 2002 when you won it, too, huh? You stupid Brooklyn bastard.
Oh, that's funny. Good stuff. Good stuff.
Oh, man. All right, well, I can hear the hotline ringing even though I got my headset on. That phone number is 813-448-1120. We're hoping that you call us and leave a message. And if we use it, we'll probably send you something nice.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, we talked earlier about Twitter.
Uh-huh.
And interestingly enough, someone calls in and asks us about it ourselves. So let's see what he has to say.
Hey, guys. Longtime listener, Enduro 8. Been with you guys since way back in episode 2. First time to call in. And I know how much fun it is finding you guys on Facebook and getting updates about, you know, purchases of 62 2-liters. I guess that's 124 liters of diet soda and all that fun stuff. But anyways, now I've seen you guys are on Twitter, and you guys need some more followers, though. You're currently ranked number 15 and number 19 in terms of poker podcasters on a site called twitterfelt.com. Anyways, I thought that was funny. That's actually my site, I will admit it. and I added a little podcaster section just to needle you guys. So anyway, thought it'd be cool to set that up, have everybody follow everybody out at the World Series without having to actually get accounts and follow everybody by hand themselves. So my main question was, are you guys going to be tweeting during your Vegas trip? You know, the one with the $23 hotel that you guys got. Would love to see updates while you guys are out there and the action, what you guys are doing.
Wow, so we're ranked, Chris.
Yeah, whatever.
Apparently not high enough, but, you know, we're ranked.
Yeah, you know, don't call us up pimping your own stuff, man. We got enough stuff to pimp on the show. You know what I mean? Man.
But, you know, to his other question, here's the thing. I experimented with Twitter about a month ago. I got on. I started doing some updates and just to try to figure out what it was all about, you know?
Yeah.
And I got to say, after that month of experimenting, I still have no clue. If I'm any closer to understanding the fascination of Twitter.
You know, last night, I'm gonna say everything that I need to say about Twitter was said on Conan O'Brien last night. I'm sorry I'm bringing it up again, but, you know, they were making fun of it so bad, it was like, here's the biggest Twitter of the week, and it's from Miley Cyrus. And it's like, standing in line for a latte, am I ever going to get one? You know, who cares? I mean, really. I mean, I'll have my phone with me, and I have Twitter on my phone. And if something significant's happening, like our meetup or one of us is playing in a tournament or something like that and we're going deep, I may send out a Twitter to let everybody know, you know.
It's
but
a tweet,
really,
please. Tweet. You don't even know the right terminology.
Well, twittering, tweeting, whatever. I may do that, but, you know, really, I'm going to be so busy out there. I don't think I'm going to be stopping and telling everybody when I'm, you know, pinching a loaf. So I think I probably won't do it, but if someone says, hey, you should put that on Twitter, I may do it, you know, but I really don't know when I'm going to find time to do it.
Yeah, that's really been my promise. I haven't got the little tweet barrier or whatever I need to be doing my phone. It would be a whole lot easier than having, you know, a 15th window open on my computer at all times. So once I do that, I will get back in the tweet game.
Well, here's the sad news, or it could be the happy news of the show.
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. Our swag wheel, obviously, if you've been paying attention the last couple weeks, was stolen.
Yeah.
Stolen from us.
A random prize generator.
For no reason. This week, you know, I went and checked the Annie Up mailbox, and, you know, lots of good stuff there. But we got a ransom note, Chris.
Oh, no.
And, of course, the ransom note was in Portuguese. So, touche, real funny, guys.
I could put it in that Google Translator.
Appreciate that. So apparently, you know, I can't read Portuguese, obviously, so, you know, obviously the ransom came and went. And so the wheel showed up all busted up and stuff, attached to your underwear, Chris, on the flagpole outside Antioch headquarters.
You sure it wasn't Steve Spears' underwear from the Times?
No, it was yours.
It was my underwear.
And I just have to say, to the Andy Up Nationals who stole it, and your underwear. Real mature guys. What are you going to do next? You're going to steal our mascot goat right before Apes on Wednesday? Is that what this is going to be?
Oh, my God. Greg Brady's going to be hiding it in his attic.
Oh, man. Well, I tell you, you know, I probably could have repaired the swag wheel, but I'm not coming in within 10 feet of anything that's touched your banana sling. So,
my banana hammock.
It might be a sling. So I guess, you know, we're just going to have to, you know, pick the prizes ahead of time. So,
all right, well, what did we pick this week?
All right, so our unnamed Twitter hero, it was going to win a lovely card protector from PokerFaces.tv. Send us your address. In fact, actually, why don't you tweet it to us? How's that?
Oh, my God.
Tweet us your address, and we will get that card protector from PokerFaces.tv straight out to you.
All right, well, now we'll move on to our mailbag then, because we got so much stuff to give away today. And since we're saving some time on spinning the wheel, we can spend a little time on this one. Steve DeBroda says he wants us to discuss table image. Like, how do you start out? Do you engage in any ruses, you know, to get things started? He says he likes to dress like a lawyer who just dropped in during a conference to play hands. He's like, I got a coat and a loose tie on, a dress shirt, etc. And then he raises big blind and shows down crap. He says, then it's lockdown time, baby. So he wants to know, is that stupid? And would it work on Scott, who apparently hates him because he hates all lawyers?
All right, now here's the thing. Before we get to his question, I'm already maligned by the women of the world, and Native American, or I mean African American beggars.
And you're no friends to Israel.
Well, yeah, apparently you're right. Exactly. And but it was you, Chris. You.
I know.
That hates lawyers, not me.
It's one of the very few times that it's great when people can't figure out who's who on the show.
I guess they just assume that since I'm the one that apparently hates everyone, even though I love everyone. So, Steve, yeah, that's Chris. But, you know, I like this thing. I mean, I like kind of I don't know whether I want to go Halloween every time I'm playing poker, but I think he's probably onto something here, don't you?
Well, yeah, I do, and I do know it works, but in other facets of life, and since poker is just a microcosm for life, I feel like it would work at the table. And I'll give you a quick example. I used to, you know how I dress now with crappy shorts on and T-shirts, but I always had a lot of money saved, and I had impeccable, you know, credit. And I used to want to buy a car. I'd go to the dealership dressed like an idiot and see. I would get the true, you know, personality of the salesman. And if he didn't give me the time of day, you know, I would just say, all right, fine, screw you, I'm leaving. And I did it once. I bought a Honda that way. I went down the street to the dealership, you know, the rival dealership, bought a Honda with all the works, drove back to the dealership where the guy wouldn't give me the time of day, pulled up in front of him and said, hey, buddy, here's your commission right here. This is the car I just bought cash that you would have got. I'll see you later. So that's what I did, and it worked. The guy didn't give me any respect, thought that I was, you know, just some sort of bum. He couldn't afford a car. I was going to try to milk it down or whatever, and it paid off for someone else. So I think it would work. I think it would work at the table. If you're dressing up like you've got a lot of money and you don't know what you're doing, people are going to play with you. And if you're a bum or you look like you're drunk, they're going to try to take advantage of you. So I think it would work if you're a really good actor, if you stick with it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, one of the things I think is interesting, too, is when people say they sit down on the table and have no information on their players.
Yeah.
Because when it's live, that's so wrong.
Yeah, it's so
wrong. And I'm not saying you should engage in profiling of any type, but stereotypes are what they are because there's something behind them, right?
Yeah, I mean...
So the first thing I do is look around and kind of size up some people. Now, I try not to fall into traps like... you know, these macho guys that, hey, there's a chick. She's easy money. You know, that's stupid.
Right.
But you can get a little bit of some information. You know, if you're on the borderline of making a call or not, you know, the way people are dressing or acting, I think, should play into your decision until you know otherwise.
I agree. I think that you can get a lot of info just by the way people stack their chips, by the way they act at the table, how they handle their chips. And just by the way they look, if you could tell that they're comfortable with betting, or, you know, when you come back from the bathroom and they say you got a post, if the guy doesn't know what he's talking about, then you know he hasn't really sat at the table that long. There's a lot of keys to knowing people's experience at the table just from little facts like that.
Yeah.
So I agree.
Steve,
I think
you keep doing that.
Yeah, I'd keep doing it, Steve. Take advantage of people like Scott who totally stereotype you. All right, well, give something away to this guy because he deserves it.
All right, Steve, you got a wonderful set of Texas Hold'em strategy cards from greatpokerhands.com. Also part of our hot deals this week, so check all those out at aviatmagazine.com/partners if you haven't signed up for the newsletter, which you should have.
Well, Scott, it's a big week, you know.
It is.
Big week because we are going to solve a mystery today, and we've given it a lot of thought.
I've spent the better part of the week. I have not gone to the bathroom. I'm in very much pain, but this is what I want to do so I can properly analyze the second case of Dancing Tens.
See, now this isn't right because you told me during the week that you think better on the can. So I would think that you should go there now while we're doing this hand. And all right, let's listen to part one of Case of the Dancing Tens again.
Greetings, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and this is another 1 Minute Mystery, the case of the Still Dancing Tens. It's much later in the same multi-table tournament, but it's deja vu all over again for us. We have 12.5K now, and the blinds are 300-600 with a 75 ante. Despite the increase in chips, we are one of the shorter stacks at our table, and our M is 10. Right out of the gate, the end of the gun raises to 1,800 now.
Sorry to disturb you.
Folds around us in the cutoff, and we look down once again at 10-10. This time it's in the cutoff, and this combined with it being later in the tournament gets me thinking. Call, raise, or fold? Folding is too weak of a play for this stage. We haven't even reached the money yet, and if I raise and get re-raised, 10-10 is going into the muck here. So I decide to call and hope that the button and the blinds depart.
I don't think we are trying to steal anything here.
The button and blinds do fold, and the pot is 4,800 when we see a flop of 2 of clubs, 8 of diamonds, 4 of diamonds. We do not have the 10 of diamonds. The end of the gun fires out a bet of 3,000 into the pot. Now I ask you, what's different this time, and what do you do?
All right, I think we're in a pickle here, Chris.
I do too, but I don't dislike this flop.
No, you can't not like this flop, but the pickle is our chip stack and our position and everything else that you have to take into account here. I mean, calling here just decimates your stack, gets you no information, so that's just worthless.
Yeah, I know.
Folding, I think, is a terribly weak play. If you called preflop, I mean, what were you waiting for?
Yeah, exactly.
You're not going to call preflop if you're only going to wait for a 10 to come. That's
right,
stupid.
Right.
So I think you have to raise, don't you?
Yep.
And if you raise, you know, with your stips, you might as well just ship it all in, right?
Yeah, I think that we got to shove, and if we get called, hope that we're ahead of like ace king or a smaller pair, like sevens or something, and who think. Or even nines, and they think that they have a better hand because it's all undercard. So just hope you don't have a set or ace-king. I mean, overpair.
But even with hands like ace-king, ace-queen, ace-jack, those hands, you're still going to dodge a couple more cards too. So, I mean, you're the favorite there, I think. But,
right.
You know, it's a scary situation.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you that if you're going to play this hand, there's no better flop than this one. And why were you playing it? Just to watch him take the hand away from you? No, you're going to have to get it all in here and just hope that you are ahead like you think you are. So, and how is it different than the last time we had this situation? I guess not really that different. I mean, I guess maybe it's later in the tournament. The stack's going to be a little bigger, but...
Well, I think that board in the first hand offers you, oddly, a little more protection, even though there's an overcard on it, you know, with the pair. Plus, you know, you got some bluffing material there too. Or in this hand, you know, what is this guy going to be scared of with your bet? You know, aside from maybe a set of eights.
Yeah, exactly.
So
I think if we get called here, it's going to be like a pair of nines or something, and we're going to be ahead or ace king. That's the only thing I can think of. Those two hands.
So, that sounds about right.
All right, let's see what happens.
Welcome back. There is actually very little difference in these two hands. Only the fact that we could get away from this hand easier than we could the last one, at least until that flop came out.
Who can say?
I have noticed that sometimes we decide we are ahead, but then are reluctant to create a big pot. So in this case, if I'm behind, and I bet, would I call a raise? Maybe, so I'm not saving much money there. But if I am ahead, and I fail to ship it in, would I win much less than if I shipped it now? Surely I would. I could also make the argument if he has any marginal calling at all, he may make a mistake with only 7,500 behind and call pretty much any size bet. I find the odds of getting paid off huge just overwhelming, and I ship in my 10,000 in chips. When he snap calls, I have a brief moment of fear as I figure he had to be at least 8-1 that he flopped a set of 8s, and there's a better chance he called with ace king. But our fears are alleviated when he flips over 6-6. The turn is the ace, and the river's the nine, and thankfully, our opponent didn't have ace-king this time. Until next time, this is Clobo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com saying see you at the World Series. You can follow me on Twitter at LTColombo.
Sixes. Man,
sixes.
I want that guy in my game.
Man, I tell you, that's pretty weak. I mean, it's a decent flop for sixes, but he can't think he's ahead when we shove.
Yeah, at that point, yeah. I mean, it's different because of the position here. I mean, I was worried where we were because we're facing an under-the-gun raiser, so you got to give them credit for a bigger hand. But when we push after...
With sixes, you know, oh my God.
If you're that opponent and you've raised under the gun and then somebody goes over the top of you...
Man.
Yeah, I think the sixes, you got to say, hey, hand, cookie jar, ouch.
All right. Well, I think we did this one justice. I think we had a lot of fun with this one, and you know, we had some time to, you know, let it marinate and, you know, and we listened to everyone's, you know, opinions on what we should do. And I think that's what we did, you know. Now, here's the thing. Now, did we actually look at the forum and say, this is what everyone else thought and you guys weren't even close, or, you know, or that's the best part about this now is we get to make fun of people. There were a few replies on there. But really, you know, most of the replies were about, you know, what we were going to do with the Hand of the Week and not the actual Hand of the Week. So if you guys are going to complain, you know, you need to, you know, make some comments on the blog and start really, you know, picking these hands apart. We did have Own the Dream on there. You know, he said that with 7,000 plus in the pot already and all unders, you have to go all in, which is what we said. So really, you know, hats off, Own the Dream. You were right, and we were right. So anyone else, you know, I think that Unimpressed, too, who, you know, for a while there quit poker. I think he's back now, but for a while there he gave up online poker. He was saying, too, that, you know, you need to get your money in. So
I think it's one of those situations where almost everybody, when you analyze it down, you have to push.
Yeah.
Remember Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited. He already knows that Poker Stars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our Poker Stars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
Now, here is something interesting. We have an interview today with Tiffany Michelle, known as Hot Chips. I actually find out how she gets that nickname, and I had to go to the Daytona Beach Kennel Club for their World Series qualifier, and she was on hand for, like, autographs and stuff, and she played in it. So I interviewed her. So, sorry to say, everyone's favorite Anti-Up host, Scott Long, is not going to be part of the questioning. We apologize ahead of time that you won't be hearing any high-pitched squeals that will break the glass in your living room. You know, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I didn't get to include Scott in this, and I hope that I did the best that I could, and that you guys appreciate it. But
I'm sure you did, buddy.
Here comes the interview with Tiffany Michelle.
So your nickname's Hot Chips. How'd you get that moniker?
I got that in 2006 when I was hosting for Bluff Radio, which was doing coverage of the World Series on Sirius Satellite Radio.
Yeah.
And everybody thought I needed a poker nickname. And we had a call-in segment where people got to call in and suggest nicknames for me. And so one guy was like, you know, MASH character Hot Lips O'Houlihan. I was like, what if we make it? I've seen her at the tables. What if we call her Hot Chips? He's like, I've seen her doing the, you know, chip tricks. So she's pretty good looking. And everyone loved it. And then it kind of just stuck from there.
That's
so
cool.
Yeah.
Hey, it was just like when somebody comes up with their own nickname.
Right.
You can't do that.
No.
That's cool. Our agent's email began to me with the saying, poker's sexiest player.
Oh, God.
Now, where did that come from? That come from the agent, or what's up with that?
Why, you're supposed to ask other people about me.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
Everyone thinks I have a big ego enough, so, like, the fact that I mentioned on ESPN, like, oh, it's fun being a cute chick in poker, everyone's like, oh, my God, she's so full of herself, and she's not even that cute. So it's kind of a taboo subject if I talk about it. I don't know. I mean, I think a lot of people, I'm young, you know, I'm a fairly attractive person for the kinds that you get in the game of poker.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, just by the fact that I'm a chick in a male-dominated field who actually, you know, I used to do beauty pageants and acting and modeling, and so I suppose, compared to your average, you know, guy sitting at the table, maybe I'm a little more attractive.
Okay.
So.
Well, you brought up your acting. You began acting at the age of 10.
Uh-huh.
And how do your skills as an actor help you at the table?
You know what? We've seen a big movement, like, in the entertainment industry, that they're really drawn to the game of poker. And I think just purely all the prep work you have to do when you're getting into character, becoming a certain person in a role, the observation that you have to have, the different mannerisms that you take on, you know, you can really see certain actors and roles, like, pick up these different quirks of people. And so I think that really helps, because then you can sit there, and when you start, like, tapping your foot or moving your eyes or doing different things with your body, I can pick up a lot of information. Not only can I sit there and then put myself in your shoes and say, okay, how's he feeling when he's behaving this way? What does that mean about his hand? But then I can use that to then, you know, make a certain color play against you. So I think the observation really helps. I think also as an actor, we're able to give off whatever information we want, so I can be strong in hand, I can be weak in a hand. And a lot of times you have this term Hollywooding.
Yeah.
But usually you can tell when somebody's like, oh, oh, should I call? It's so obvious because people aren't very good about being subtle.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of actors can Hollywood, but in a way that they totally get away with and is totally believable, and you don't even know that we're acting and giving you information.
So do you do that? Do you come to the table thinking, oh, I'm going to play this role today because of the type of players that are at the table, or I'm going to shift to this role and have this sort of way of, you know, almost like this sort of prepared way of behaving at a table,
right,
given the amount of competition or the way the competition plays against you?
I don't think I necessarily come in with that in mind, but there's definitely certain hands, whether I'm strong or weak, that then as soon as I pick that up, I decide, okay, I'm going to go about it this way, or I'm going to give off this information. And it doesn't even have to be, the interesting thing is it doesn't even have to be words or physical actions. There's just certain, it's going to sound silly, vibes and confidence or weakness that you can give off that people pick up on. That's what we as, you know, professional poker players pick up on. It's not always body language. And for the most part, I actually try to be fairly quiet. You know, I think that if people are intimidated and scared to play with you, it's a big advantage for you. So usually, I mean, I guess that's just kind of the way that I go. I'm a very friendly person if we're just sitting here hanging out. But when I come to the table, I try to be a little bit more tough, a little bit more quiet, a little more mysterious, so that people, you know, I don't want to be somebody's best friend. I want them to be kind of scared, and I get a lot of people to get off hands that way because they're afraid, they never know where to put me.
What was it like playing poker with your brothers and your grandfather?
It was actually kind of funny. My family was very much into card games, and so I, for some reason, from an early age, loved poker. I loved kind of the gaming aspect. We'd get little Skittles or M&Ms and play with. My mom, when my grandfather would get, like, the poker chips set out, she was like, you guys can play cards, but I don't want you gambling. It was, like, this very taboo subject, like, no gambling allowed. And so we would, you know, do it as much as we could, but it was fun. It was just something naturally that, you know, the bluffing, and there was a skill to it that I kind of always enjoyed. So, and I was, you know, having two brothers, I was very competitive. I loved going up against the boys. There's something very satisfactory to me about beating other guys. They're good competition. I'm a competitive person, so it's very fulfilling.
All right, well, speaking of being competitive, I remember, I think I saw a couple of videos of you where you admitted to actually getting teary-eyed to being the last woman standing last year when you finished 17th at the main event. How significant was that for you? How important is it for you to be the last woman? And I realize you want to go to win and everything, but how, because you were running around checking to see how Kara was doing, all these other people.
Right.
Well, how important was that to you?
It meant so much. I mean, I had, up until 2008, I mean, I had been coming to the World Series for like 3 years, and every year watching my friends do well, watching people final table, and on the sidelines, I sat there thinking, I could do that. Like, I feel like my game is good enough that I could play with these guys, and I could do well. So not only was it just this amazing feeling to prove to yourself, like, holy cow, I can do this, but to be the last woman standing, I had seen all the years past. Like, Maria Ho was a good friend of mine, so I saw what it did for her the year before. I saw that, what it meant. I saw where that title took you and how much respect you got for it, not only from the poker community, but just then on a monetary career opportunity value. And so to then sit there and be like, that's me? What? It was just, it meant so much. And I think that's what people misunderstood. I wasn't rooting for other women to fail. Like, I was sitting here rooting for, like, my dream to come true and to, like, prove to myself that I could do this, and it was just amazing.
Now, do you feel like at all that the way they follow the final women like that, that it's sexist at all? Do you feel like there's sort of still this sort of old boy network where, you know, oh, look, it's still the last lady playing, that kind of thing? Do you feel like there's still a level of respect that they need to get before they stop doing something like that?
I feel like there is sexism within poker, but I think any kind of game or field that you have, when you have a minority, there's going to be more attention given to that minority in the field. And obviously, as women, we're a minority playing with the guys. I mean, I know there's a lot of people, like Annie Duke feels very strongly about women's only tournaments, that she's like, you know, we can play with the guys. Why do we keep kind of segregating for ourselves? But, you know, it'll be interesting at the point that we don't have a last one standing being a big thing, but just by the sheer numbers, you know, it's like maybe 10% of the field were women. So until it becomes more mainstream, I think we are going to have that focus because it is, a big accomplishment.
Do you support women's events?
I'm on the line with them, honestly. From a strictly selfish point of view, they're really good value for me.
Right.
However, you know, Annie has really strongly, and she's, you know, a friend of mine, expressed her opinion about how, you know, if women are wanting to get in the game, it shouldn't be, we would be pissed off if they had a men's only tournament as a woman. I would be so upset about that. So how can we get away with having women's only? So I'm on the field. It's a good value, but at the same time, I really feel like women should get in the game. They should have the confidence. They should play with the guys. And if you really want to sit here and talk about equality, which women, you know, fight for all the time, well, you're not actually having equality when you have women's only tournaments, because we would throw a fit if they had male only tournaments.
Right. All right. Well, I have to talk to you about it because everyone knows what happened last year. So a couple of things you are sort of infamous for. One of them was the whole Poker News Ultimate Bet thing. Can you tell my readers what happened there? And then has anything happened since?
It was just basically, obviously I'd been hosting for Poker News for several years, but I was backed by, I was not sponsored by Poker News. I had no affiliation with their site besides being a host for them, which was not an exclusive job that I had at all. And so basically, two poker players backed me in the event, which is a normal thing to do in poker. One of them happened to be the owner of Poker News, so via that, they said, hey, will you throw on, you know, if your magazine said, we'll pay your buy-in, throw on our logo.
Right.
Sure. So I threw on their logo. We had no exclusivity. You know, we agreed to a certain percentage. And so then kind of what happened was people, obviously Poker News lied about a lot of situations about our details and the going-ons. And so then when UB wanted to give me a logo to wear at the World Series, which I think people forget, UB is like a gaming site. Poker News is like a journalistic site. There was no competition there. If Full Tilt bought me in and then I started wearing UB, obviously there is a conflict there because they're competitors.
Right.
So basically I was backed by two poker players. They tried to make it a bigger deal saying Poker News sponsored her, they put her in all these events, she was exclusive with us, which wasn't the case. I was backed by two poker players. I gave them the percentage we agreed upon. There was nothing else agreed upon besides this is the amount you get from the tournament, and I followed through with that, and unfortunately, as I got a little more valuable in the tournament, they wanted to try to get a little more control. And nothing's really happened since. Haven't, you know, tried to kind of amicably part ways and say, sorry about the misunderstanding. They, you know, blasted me a lot in the media, which was unfortunate because they have such a huge forum, and I'm just one person.
Yeah, right.
I made Tony and Alessandro a lot of money, which, you know, there's really no thank you for that. we're a few hundred thousand dollars richer. And since then, I've gone on to sign a star player deal with Ultimate Bet, so I play there now. And there was really no conflict. There was no exclusivity with either person. I didn't even sign my deal with Ultimate Bet till after the World Series was over. I just began wearing their logos. So just a lot of ignorant people don't know, you know, all the details of what
happened. That's why I wanted to ask you. And also, there was the whole editing of ESPN where they showed a lot of your etiquette and a lot of it seemed to rub people the wrong way. How hard was it to deal with that afterward, knowing that some of that was taken out of context, some of it wasn't, but
how
was it hard to deal with that?
I was so surprised. Like, I was excited to finally see the footage. You know, I had no clue what they were going to put in there. I was still on this high from doing this awesome thing and taking 17th place and my dreams coming true, and then suddenly getting this backlash of people being like, you're disgusting, you're an evil person, you're a disgrace to poker, you're a disgrace to women, you're a slob, you know, all these things. I could not believe the negativity that followed, and it's unfortunate that I think people, I've grown up in the film and television industry, so I know how that business works. I think there's people who aren't in that don't realize it's heavily edited. You know, there's certain facial expressions that I had. Those faces didn't happen in that moment to that guy's response. There were so many conversations that they clipped out certain quotes, and you didn't get the entirety of it. Like, when Craig Marquis and I were going back and forth, and I said, he was like, oh, you're so good. I was like, yeah, I know, that's why I'm here right now. You missed an entire conversation where he was, like, seriously riding me and giving me a hard time. And so finally, I just had to be like, listen, buddy, back off, you know, and so I kind of put up this big, like, confident exterior. So it was unfortunate. I was totally shocked at how everyone took it. I was totally shocked at how magnified the simplest little things I did and said were magnified.
Yeah.
If you had any other guy doing what I did, I walk into poker rooms all the time. These guys eat their frickin' dinners at the poker table.
Right.
Nobody has ever mentioned yet I was eating some French fries, which is like a little finger food, and wiping my hands off, which they don't show. So I've just learned they're going to edit it however they want. As a woman, anything I do is going to be magnified, and, you know, life goes on. But it was quite eye-opener.
Okay.
What do you have in the works for after the World Series, between now and the World Series and after the World Series? Because I know that you do modeling and all this other stuff. Are you still doing those things, or are you focusing on poker?
Yeah, it's, you know, obviously right now poker is taking a lot of my time, which is fine. You know, it's an interesting curveball that's been thrown to me in my career, and so my management team is happy to go that direction and take the opportunities as they come. I'll be playing at the World Series. You know, obviously there's a lot of, you know, hype coming into that to see how things go.
Right.
Still in the meantime, working in film and television, auditioning when I can. I sing and songwrite. I play piano and guitar, so I'm doing a lot of music still. There's potentially a reality show that Lacey Jones, Marie Ho, and I are going to be doing.
Wow.
So a lot of, like, TV opportunities. Dancing with the Stars expressed interest in having me on this past season.
Wow.
Amazing Race is talking about having me on next season. So kind of just doing everything and anything that I possibly can and pursuing all the things I love. But at the moment, poker is, you know, a little bit of a priority.
Welcome to the Anti-Up PokerCast. I'm Mike DeMouth Mattiso, author of my new book, Check Raising the Devil.
All right, this week's Hand of the Week, a veteran Anti-Up National, Alan Stewart.
Oh, yeah.
And this comes from our infamous 8-game mixed game free roll held last week.
It was only infamous for a few people. I think that it was just more annoying than anything.
I just like saying infamous because it makes it sound more dangerous.
More evil.
Than if I just said the plain old 8-game mixed. You know what I mean?
All right, I'm looking forward to this hand because I have absolutely no idea what it's going to be on since it's 8-game mixed.
All right. I guess we, you know, if we had the prize wheel, we could spin it to see which of the 8 games he's talking about. But no, it's gone.
All right. Well, I do I have a feeling it's going to be something like Limit Hold'em?
Ding, ding, ding.
See, I knew it. With all the games that you could choose, Limit Hold'em, man. I should be doing this, and you should be doing the analysis.
All right, so here we go. We're in the Limit Hold'em part. It's level, oh, wow, I don't know my Roman numerals, 26.
Don't you follow the Super Bowl?
No, I don't, actually. So we're at 400 and 800. And, of course, remember, this is the 8-game mix, so it's a six-handed table. And at this point, I think they had eliminated all the those dead stacks who signed up just hours before and couldn't show up. I hate that.
Wait a minute. All right, I just have something to say real quick. Are you sure you can read Roman numerals? Because level 26 is way past 400, 800.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I probably know. Well, it's two X's and a V and a line. That's 26, right?
That's 26.
Yeah, remember they started at 25, 20, 50, and they went up. It was a good structure.
I know, but 25, 50.
And they went every 6 minutes.
Level 26 is 400, 800? That can't be right.
I see. That's why you got to get an apes this Wednesday, 9 what? O'clock. Excellent structure. All right, so remember, it's six-handed, and so here we go. We have a player who he likes to call a villain, and he says, I do mean villain, okay. And we will conceal the name to protect the, well,
the villain.
Probably guilty. that dude has a good number of chips. I'm sorry, not a good number of chips. We are sitting on about 24,000. That guy has about 8,000.
Okay. All right? Okay.
And we are in the big blind, and we have a call. The villain raises. Everybody else folds, comes to us in the big blind, facing a raise. We look down, 10 of spades, 4 of spades.
Huh. So we're heads up with this guy if we call?
No, we have one more player.
One more? Oh, okay.
The end of the gun called.
Okay. Jeez. I think I'm folding. I'm sorry. I mean, I know we got 24K, but, I mean, it's a free roll, and, you know, you got a pretty decent stack now. Why get involved out of position from this with 10-4, with the trucker hand? I mean, it's literally telling you what to do. Say goodbye. Why do you want to play this hand?
All right, and you're right. He did fold, and that's the end of the hand of the week.
All right.
No, of course not. He didn't fold, because it wouldn't be a hand of the week.
Well, that's what I'm just saying. That's what I would do. So anything after this, I can't be wrong.
Now, of course, this is a hand that we would normally throw away. The only real reason I might think about it is, again, we're six-handed.
So what, 10-4 is favored? I mean, come on! Every hand is still worse than 10-4.
I'm not saying I would do it, but I'm saying if you're looking for a reason to play 10-4 suited, look for it in a shorthanded game.
Oh, man.
How's that?
Okay, but again, I'm folding. I looked and looked and found nothing. It's like looking for weapons of mass destruction. I just didn't find them.
No, seriously, this is probably an easy fold, particularly because you have an under the gun who just called, which is interesting, in between you, so could be a lot of trouble here.
You know you're behind.
You don't want to put 1,200 in, or an extra 800 in here.
Yeah, I would venture to say that we are, well, an extra 400, because we're in the big blind, right? Because it's 400, 800?
Yep.
So, So I would venture to say that we are behind all two hands here, and we're in third place, so I'm folding. But all right, let's see what happens. I'm sure he calls. He didn't raise, right?
No, he did not raise, of course.
All right, so we got three players going to the flop, right? Because there's no way the end of the gun raised again.
All right, so our hero calls, saying, certainly not great, but six-handed limit hold'em, it's suited. Ha ha! Oh, I love that suited backup.
Yeah.
All right, so the end of the gun calls, and three of us going to a flop of two of diamonds, nine of spades, ten of hearts.
Okay, well...
We are first act.
Yeah.
Top pair, crappy kicker.
I'm going with the check raise, and then if I get re-raised, I'm calling out the rest of the way.
Ah, I like how you think. In fact, actually, this is a great flop, I think, for that check raise move, because you've got a player who's already shown some strength.
Yeah.
So, you know, why come out and bet here, let him do the betting, and then smack him down?
Well, what I'm hoping to do is to get rid of the under-the-gun guy. I'm hoping he checks, too. Right, and then the guy on the button,
or that he calls, and then he'll fold to our check raise too.
But I think calling two bets cold will get him out. I don't think one bet will get him out. So I'm liking that the other guy bets, we make it two to go, and then this guy folds, and we get heads up with the other guy, or he even folds. So that's what my plan would probably be, check raising here.
All right, our hero decides to bet out. Now, of course, the reason you would bet out here is we got a pair and it's really weak and you want to get this hand over. But remember, it's limits, so it's going to be tough to drive these people out.
Yeah, there's a lot of draws. Not a lot of draws, but there's a straight draw and likely two overs will call if somebody has king-queen or king-jack or queen-jack with an open-end straight draw and two overs. So it's going to be hard to get people out. The best way to do it would be more than one bet, so I wouldn't bet out here.
All right. Our hero bets out. We get the end of the gun out of the way, and the villain just calls.
Okay, well, it worked out the way we wanted it to, as far as at least getting heads up.
But I would
prefer to just take the hand down now.
And I find the call from the villain after he raised preflop kind of weird, don't you? This is not really a scary board. If you had ace king or, you know, obviously an overpair, you'd be raising here to punish the guy who's betting. Here's the audacity to bet into you.
Well, let me ask you,
in fact,
what hand...
call screams draw, doesn't it?
Well, I don't know if it screams draw. What hand, can you think of hands that you would play in a limit game in our home game that you would call a bet for me that's not a draw or a pair? I think for sure that you would call with ace king if I bet into this pot that now has five bets in it, you would call with ace-king, and so would pretty much anyone else who plays a limit hold'em.
I would raise with ace-king here.
Well, I wouldn't raise somebody who bet into me. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I'd raise and have to make it more to hit my six outs. I don't know if I'd raise.
Oh, but you don't necessarily have to hit your six outs. You have to just let them know, hey, I've got a better hand than you, and I'm going to bet again on the turn, and they're going to have to run away.
I think it's hard for top pair to lay it down in a limit game now, so I don't think ace-king is going to force anybody out with a raise after you've already bet into him. So I don't know. We'll see. I wouldn't go anywhere right now. I would just call it down, and if I, with 24,000, you know, I would still have a decent stack if I just check-call the rest of the way. So I'm not going anywhere with this hand, and I really wouldn't raise with ace-king if I was the other guy. But that's me.
That's you. All right, so our villain, of course, calls the flop, and we're heads up to the turn, which is a three of hearts.
Well, see, again, I'm comfortable now. The pot's big enough. I'm comfortable check calling here and letting this guy either try to bluff at it, or if he's got a better hand than me, losing the minimum. I can't fold top pair right now, and especially in limit. I mean, I could fold top pair if it was bigger blinds and a smaller stack, but really at this point, it's only going to cost me, what, 1,600 more to get to the end? So,
yeah, I think check calling, I got to say, is pretty weak here, Chris.
Yeah, I'm
putting you on notice.
I'm check calling.
If I bet out, and I'm not saying I would have, obviously, if I bet out and the guy who raised preflop just called, I've got to continue to fire at this and make him really think about whether he wants to continue this hand. So I'm going to be betting out here, I think.
I don't know. Again, it's a precarious situation.
And particularly because, as our hero says, this three of hearts cannot have helped. It's impossible to think of helping at all unless, of course, he has some weird thing.
Well, again, like it's if you think that this guy is drawing. If you're convinced he's drawing, then yeah, I'd bet out. But I'm not so convinced he's drawing. I'm not convinced of that. Of course, I don't know how this guy plays either.
We'll also find out if he's not drawing, if he has a monster, now is the street when he's probably going to wake up and raise. Yeah. I don't think he's going to.
Again, I certainly don't want to bet out and then have him raise me with a monster. And I'm not going to fold. So I'm trying to get there for as cheap as possible. It's showdown. Your way is,
queens.
If he has queens, you bet, and then he raises, then you call.
That's still 1,600. You're still putting 1,600 in either way.
But if you check, and then he bets, and you just call, then you're only putting half a bet. Your way is you're guaranteeing that you have to put two bets in there, and you have a weak kicker, and you don't know what your hand is. So
yeah, but I'm not committing myself to betting on the river either, so it's still 1,600 bucks either way.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm not going to fold on the river to a bet, but you would. Are you telling me you'd fold on the river to a bet now?
Well, if I bet out and he raised and miss.
But you don't need to miss. You got a pair.
No. If I bet out, he raises, that's another 800 I got to call, so that's 1,600.
And then on the end, if we check and he bets, that's another 800 there. You could have gotten away for
1,600. Call, yeah. At that point, maybe I'm going to think I'm behind.
Man, that's really weird. To me, that's really weird. It's going to cost you 16 maximum.
We could both agree that we wouldn't have been anywhere in this situation at this point, right?
Yeah, so. No, that's true.
So let's not cannibalize each other. Let's stick to picking on the hero.
Well, that's the best part of the show. I mean, we're arguing for once. We haven't argued in a while. And I don't know. I would like to just check call it down here and see what happens.
Okay. Well, our hero listens to his favorite host and bets out. and the villain just calls.
Wow. Now it feels more like a draw now.
Doesn't it feel like more like a draw now, doesn't it?
Now, yeah, but we're so early on in the hand, you can't, you know, don't forget, too, you're privy to this knowledge before I am, so don't get all boastful.
Okay, all right.
But it does feel more like a draw now, but it doesn't necessarily mean it is one.
All right. So we go to the river, which is the Two of Hearts.
Wow.
So a flush gets there, the board pairs. Yikes.
Well, here's the thing. If the guy had pocket nines and was slow playing his set, you know, he's going to wake up if you check to him. But if he was drawing, you know, it's just one bet no matter what anyway. You're not going to risk more than one bet here. So why not just check?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. At this point, I'm definitely checking here because there's too much trouble on this board. We got top two pair with a weak – actually, our kicker doesn't even play here.
Improved our hand.
And I don't want to give him a shot of raising here.
You're really, really confusing me today, Scott. I mean, you're telling me that the Two of Hearts now scares you after all this? I mean, really, do you think this guy has a two in his hand? Now you say, oh, now I'm checking it definitely because it makes me all nervous. How could that two do anything? It didn't complete anything.
Yeah, it completed a flush.
Two of Hearts? Oh, okay, three hearts.
Yes!
Oh, okay, so that's three hearts in a row. Well, running hearts? I'm not afraid of running hearts. This guy wouldn't be in the hand for running hearts, would he?
All right, let's clarify. I'm not afraid here.
Oh,
I'm just
okay.
Being safe investing with my money.
Right.
Why bet out here and get raised when I can just check, and if he wants to fire at me, I'll take the extra bet and call in, and more power to him if he has me.
All right, I'm checking. Hey, we agree. We're checking.
All right, that's not cool. We should quit agreeing. Well, fortunately, our hero does not agree with us, so there we go.
Wow.
Bets out. One last barrel, he says. He gets raised, Chris. Who could have saw that coming?
Yeah, well, I mean, if the guy just calls, then it's not a hand at all. So something has to happen surprising in the hand. And, again, the raise means that he was slow playing a monster, and, that's what it feels like. What else could it be? If it's ace-king of hearts or ace-queen of hearts, I wouldn't be shocked. But geez, I wouldn't have bet out. I mean, God, what's the point of betting out? You're only going to get called or raised by a better hand here. So
yeah, because this is what sucks now is that, you know, in limit, I think we talked about it before, you don't really want to fold one more bet with all that money in there.
Yeah.
Regardless of what you have. But at the same time, the whole game of limit, saving bets when you're behind, it's tough to imagine that we're still ahead here. But you got to call now, and you really shouldn't have been in this position by betting out.
And let's get back to earlier, too, when you were talking about betting out on the turn, I was thinking of a saving bet there, not extracting a bet, because I'm not confident in that hand. That was why I wanted to check, not bet, because I thought I was saving a bet there instead of extracting a bet from this guy. That's how I was feeling. That's why I said that. I'm dying to know what this guy has now. He's got to have.
Yeah, and to be honest, actually, so am I. I read this hand last week, so I've actually forgotten what he has. So I am just as excited as you usually are during the Hand of the Week segment now. And Alan did one of those cool things where he leaves a lot of blank space in the email.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're not initially seen here. All right, our villain shows Ace of Hearts.
Yeah.
Wait for it.
Yeah.
Wait for it.
Yeah.
King of Hearts.
Yeah. So you looked like a genius raising on the turn with the Ace King of Hearts with no hit, no real draw. Yeah, that's what we said at the end. I mean, if he's got it, more power to him, but couldn't be afraid of that hand either. You can't be afraid of every monster under the bed, but I still would have check called. I would have saved a ton of money.
All right, well, let's go back. And I honestly did forget that our opponent had ace-king here, but back on the flop, I said he should have raised you.
Yeah, again, but here's
now,
the
he
thing.
Got more money out of it because he got lucky and hit his flush on the end, but with ace-king and I raised pre-flop, I'm not letting somebody bully me around. I'm gonna put it right back in your face.
Yeah, see, but that's the thing, though, is he had to get absolutely, you know, hit in the face lucky to win that hand. And, you know, raising, yeah, sure.
By the
raising.
Cards, but raising is going to put doubt in my opponent and may even get him to slow down and probably save me some money.
Yeah, no, if you're the other guy. But instead, the guy, you know, I'm playing as Alan. And as Alan, I would have saved a bunch of money here and I wouldn't have lost to the Ace King as much as he did.
Oh, absolutely. But I'm talking about we're playing the villain here, and I really think the villain should have raised with ace-king on the flop. Now, I don't know what Alan would have done after that, but, you know, when you have ace-king and you've taken the lead pre-flop, and you've got three unders, including a heart, I think you gotta keep letting people know that you're the boss on the cheap street.
Yeah, on the cheap street.
If it goes to the turn, then it gets different.
Well, let me ask you now, go back to Alan. If you're Alan, are you folding the rest of this way if you play it the way I did? With top pair the whole way. You still have top pair, and now you've actually improved your hand on the river to a better kicker.
No, I'm probably not folding, but I'm also not betting out on the turn. And I think that's where the villain would have been better, because then, now that second heart comes, now he's got a lot of options. He could decide to bet and try to take it down there. He can check and try to get the free card to hit his flush or his ace or his king. He's got a lot more options there.
Yeah, and I agree.
And I probably would have still bet on the turn if I had been the villain too. And at that point, then you have to go back to our hero Alan, and you know, is he really confident with his top pair weak kicker, where he's got an undergun? I mean, a pre-flop raiser who's raised him on the flop and then fired out again on the turn. I think maybe I would be folding there if I was Alan.
See, here's the thing, though. You would be folding it because you would have folded that hand pre-flop. That's the thing. You didn't fold that hand pre-flop. You're playing it. So what are you playing that hand for? Are you playing it for a flush only, a weak flush? Or are you playing it for a pair? Alan was playing this for both those scenarios and hit his 10. He's not going anywhere with it, either one, because he doesn't believe the guy who raised, or two, you know, he's got top pair and his hand can improve with another pair on the board and improve his kicker. So I can't imagine him going anywhere no matter what the under the gun did to me here. Once I've got top pair and they're all unders after that, I can't imagine Alan with that stack going anywhere because he played this hand to hit the 10 and he hit it. So I just can't imagine him getting enough pressure from this guy on the turn with a raise or if we check to him just a bet. I just can't see the ace-king raising on the turn meaning anything to Alan fold. I don't think he's going to fold for one more bet after that. I really don't. I just don't see him going anywhere.
No, we're talking about raising on the flop and then firing out again on the turn. So.
Yeah, I know. Even then.
That's what makes limit complicated, at least, because you know one play changes the entire dynamic of the rest of the hand.
I agree. I think he's playing to hit that 10, and he hit the 10, and he's not going anywhere. The way he played it was shocking to me, betting out on every street. But, you know, if I was playing this hand and hit my 10, I would take it to the end and then for the least amount of money and be happy to showdown. You know, instead, it cost him like six bets here with a crappy 10-4. So,
well, gee, what a wonderful hand of the week there. You know, we really need to get more hand analysis on the show, Chris, I think.
I think so, too.
We don't spend enough time with them.
What really makes me mad is that I don't get to spin the wheel now because it would have freaking flew like a saucer out of the building because I'm so steamed up now. But now we just got to hand over this present, whatever it is.
Yep, and it's a good one for our friend Alan, an electronic dealer button from ultimatedealerbutton.com.
Cool, I don't even have one of those.
So use that in your home game, Alan, and think hard about playing 10-4 suited next time.
All right, well, I want to thank Tiffany Michelle for agreeing to let me interview her, and it was a good interview. I think we learned a lot from her, and, you know, good show.
Yeah, and I guess next week, tentatively scheduled, Father Paul, a longtime listener, a man of the cloth, going to be talking about an interesting topic, religion and poker. So if folks have any questions for him, send it to us. And also, Father Paul, as you know, Chris, has written a book on Stud 8.
Yes, I've read it.
So I am really hoping, I'm holding the hand of the week spot open next week for a really good Stud 8 hand.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to him being on the show. I have a lot of fun with him through email, and he's just a great guy, and I really want to see what he has to say about poker and religion. I think it's just a fascinating topic, and I really look forward to it. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.